Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we're talking about the top cards from Spider-Man. We have the full set. It's going to be dropping in like a week, probably, when this episode goes up. So we're going to be talking about the cards from the set that we think are best and we're most hyped about. And we got the small crew this week. Tomer couldn't be here. He's on the road this week. But we're joined by Krim, our resident Spider-Man expert. How's it going today, Krim?
Again, you know, I only like Spider-Man for his characters around him. So, yes,
hey,
I guess.
You know way more about it than I do. I know that. I know that, at least. And we also have Phil. Phil, what's your level of Spider-Man knowledge? Are you a Spider-Man guy? I don't know if I've ever asked you that.
I mean, as an animator, I really like the animated movies. I'm not a superhero guy in general. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Eh, that doesn't matter, because we're talking about Magic cards, and there are some very interesting ones in the set. So that's what we're going over today. But before we get into that, we got a couple of sponsors. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put a pack in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use a sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about cards that were super overestimated during spoiler season, to the point that people even wanted these cards banned. And our top comment comes from @CRSS29, says, "How Krim wins games in three steps. Step one, everyone else, I won't run removal. If anything needs removing, Krim will take care of it. Step two, Krim, I'm the only one that runs removal. If I'm the problem, no one can stop me. Step three, Krim victory." And I actually think that is how the season of Commander Clash has played out a lot of weeks.
I don't think I've ever felt the lack of swords to plowshares as hard as I have
until every deck.
Phil has it. Phil, yeah, I Phil. See you out there. But like, you know, one swords between four players is kind of interesting.
Anyway, let's talk some Spider-Man. And we're going to talk about the top cards from this set, our favorite cards from this set. And let's kick things off today with Krim. Krim, we got to start with you. What do you got for us from Spider-Man?
I think I'm going to lead off with probably one of the more iconic Spider-Man villains, which would be Norman Osborn, who's gone through some wild development arcs. And yeah, he turns into the Green Goblin. But Norman Osborn is one in a blue, can't be blocked. And when it deals combat damage to a player, it connives. And then you could pay one in Grixis to transform it into the Green Goblin. Flying Menace, spells you control from your graveyard cost two less to cast. And then, of course, the Goblin formula. Each non-land card in your graveyard has Mayhem. The Mayhem cost is equal to its mana cost. So being able to connive and loot your board like as much as you need, I think this is a very good one because Connive specifically puts the 1/1 counter on it. And since the Green Goblin side is transform and not like, you know, the flip planeswalkers, which exiles it, brings it back, you still keep the counters. And then on top of that, yeah, like you just fill up your yard and then eventually you get to the backside. That's giving all your cards mayhem is always going to be a good time, right? And so I feel like giving anything in my hand mayhem now is just going to spiral out of the gate, spiral out pretty quick. And there's like water cooler talk about apparently Norman Osborn being a CDH viable commander, but I don't know much about that. So
wait, mayhem also works with spells, so, and they don't exile, so you can just
That's the biggest thing here. Wow. So the spells don't exile, and you just get to put it back into the graveyard.
So let me actually ask you a rules question, because I'm not sure about this myself. So let's say you discard a card, You mayhem it from your graveyard with a green goblin. It goes back in your graveyard. Does that still count as a card you discarded this turn because you discarded it earlier? Or is it a new version of that card? Because, like, if you blink something, how it is a new version of that effect. Do either of you know? Because I'm actually not sure how that works.
Oh. Wait. That's a good... Okay, hold on. I think I see what you're asking here. So if you have Green Goblin out, you discard a card, you cast the card...
With
right,
the mayhem. You mayhem.
With the mayhem.
And it goes back in your graveyard. Can you just mayhem it again and again and again?
Wait, yeah.
No, because you're not... Okay. You can't, because that is not another instance of you discarding it. You're just using it.
No, but wait. So you may cast this card from your graveyard for its mayhem cost if you discarded it this turn.
Yeah. So once you play it and it goes back in the graveyard, it won't technically be discarded anymore, right? Because you didn't discard. Okay. So
it's not an infinite loop.
Crazy as, I was thinking, wow, it's like Underworld Breach. This card is so ridiculous if it were that way. Yeah. I mean,
but the cost reduction, that's pretty sweet. And with all the random self discard, you can definitely like get some, like at least a cheap Breach the Multiverse or something like that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It definitely seems like a fun build around. What were you going to say, Phil?
Is a 2-mana, 3-color commander that can't be blocked just interesting by itself? Also, the Knife is also pumps it or something like Voltron, unblockable with 3 colors for 2 mana. That seems kind of interesting.
Some people have argued, depending on the format, like if casual, that maybe the front side is just actually better.
If you get away with it and slap a sword on it or something, then maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the front side being pretty good as well. The front side just is, like, not as build-around-y to me. I guess you can play it like as, like, a reanimator or commander. And it is interesting that it adds a new color, 2 new colors to it, because normally we see that, like, looting unblockable effect on mono-blue cards. So it's cool to see Ingrixis, and I think that powers it up a ton in CDH. That's probably why people are talking about it, because since you're in Grixis, you get like Thoracle combos and stuff that it just is like a powerful color combination. I think though this is just like a pretty fun casual build around. I think the self-discard mayhem theme is really interesting. Plus it works with like Flashback. It works with like Escape. There's a whole bunch of different mechanics that you cast spells from your graveyard. So I think this will be a really interesting and fun commander to build around. Plus, I don't know if you all saw the Omen Pass version. Who doesn't love Fleam? That is like, I don't know if you've seen the Magic Internet, but everyone loves Fleam.
Fleam.
I have no idea what Fleam is.
Okay.
So I assume that's the Omen Pass.
It's the Omen Pass backside of the card. Okay. It's just a super cute, goofy looking dragon thing, but yeah.
I wish this was real. What?
I mean,
and it's a goblin Okay.
I'm curious, would you put Flash into this deck? Because that gets around the Mayhem thing, right? Because like Mayhem still has timing restrictions applied to it.
Right. Interesting.
So once you give everything Flash, you can now just do the madness thing, but instead it's actually going to go back to your graveyard instead of like into the ether.
Yeah, that is actually a neat idea. I probably would, I think. My first impulse was to build it as just like a self-discard deck with like Monument to Endurance and Bone Misers and so forth. But I think the Flash synergies on top of that would make it even stronger. Plus, I found anytime I just have like a Leyline of Anticipation in a commander game, it always overperforms. Just like people, it's almost like a ghostly prison to some extent. If you can just pass with all your mana up, people think twice before like coming at you just out of the fear of the unknown. So I have found those flash effects to actually like punch up a little bit and be better than I would think in commander. So yeah, I think the flash idea is super cool. Let's keep moving on to the next card. Phil, what do you got for us that you like from the Spider-Man set?
I mean, this is not a surprise to anyone, I think. And also, the name is pretty cool, and it's also the name on the Omen Pass version. So let's just say I choose the Omen Pass version here.
Are we pointing at each other?
Imposter Syndrome. It's 6-mana enchantment. Whenever a non-token creature you control deals combat damage to your player, create a token of that, a copy token of that creature, except it isn't legendary. That is almost a little too much, but I guess I take it. So whenever you hit an opponent, you create a token copy. It triggers the talent. It's also crazy. Out of control. If you get an Alpha Strike with this, the next opponent's gonna feel it double as hard. So maybe a little win more, but I already like, what's the coin flip thing? Mirror March.
Yeah.
Right. This is just,
this is kind of blue mirror.
But
March.
This is guaranteed.
You gotta attack, but
hold on, wait a minute. Oh, this is guaranteed getting the token. Where's it? The mirror
March.
You
gotta do
who
a combat
knows?
Damage. It's way harder than 50-50.
I feel like this card's like so explosive and it's going to lead to some ridiculous game states. But then it's also like post-Wrath or something going to be kind of awkward. There's going to be times when you top deck and you're like, oh, this is not a good time for imposter syndrome. But there's going to be some games where this card really pops off. What were you going to say, Krim? What do you think of imposter syndrome?
I mean, I think this card is just absolutely nuts, right? Like being able to, I thought it'd be like a one or more, right? Whenever one or more creatures deals, you know, token.
So you only
damage.
Get one copy, basically. Yeah.
But this is just going to give you at however many copies as creatures can deal damage, right?
And basically, yeah.
And it gets around the current 2025 dilemma with any clone effect and all these legendary creatures that exist, right? So they've already kind of built in the everything anti everything legendary by making it so it's not legendary.
Especially in the context of the Spider-Man set or like some other recent sets we've seen with just so many legends, you almost have to do that, right? Or else like you're just not going to be able to play it with a lot of the coolest cards from the set. What kind of decks would you guys play this in? So this question, discounting Spider-Man themed decks, because I think a lot of people play it because it has Spider-Man in the ARP. So if you're playing like Cosmic Spider-Man or something, it fits right in there. But let's say you're not playing it because of flavor reasons for Spider-Man. What kind of shell do you put this in? Just anything with valuey creatures that's going to build a board and it's going to like pop off sometimes?
Blink. As weird as it sounds, kind of blink decks. It's like a different way of blinking.
I was thinking Panharmonicons. It's kind of another way to do the blink thing in Panharmonicon style decks, like whatever, Felix or Yarok or something.
To be honest, though, it might be one of those cards that just win more. You got the hitting with value creatures is like.
It reminds me, what's the card? And I still love this card, but I very rarely play it. It's like it was like a Baldur's Gate card, I think. It's like an 8-mana white enchantment, and it gives all your stuff Myriad.
Oh, everything Myriad. Yeah,
and every time
yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to make the craziest board with this. And there are sometimes that I do make the craziest board with it, but then a lot of times I'm like, oh, it's 8-mana, it's actually not consistent, and I end up cutting it from the deck. So it might be one of those cards that, like, is super cool, but it actually maybe is a little win more.
I am very curious to see how it plays in a generic blue deck or, like, blue base deck. Right. Obviously, there's.
Birds.
It's like in a bird deck. I mean, Richard won't play it because it's 6-mana, but.
Or like.
That is.
Doesn't this go super wild with token stuff? Like doubling season, Adirxin.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you can actually take advantage of the tokens. You still got to be able to get in the combat damage. That is true.
And it has to be a non-token creature that deals the damage, so the token copies won't replicate the tokens.
I think it's actually going to be in decks where you don't expect it at first. Maybe it's not Yarok decks, but like flying or what's the thing that gives everything with toughness or power one or more, one or less unblockable.
That
like
blue ninja
like
two drop. Yeah. Tetsuko or something. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
I think it was in Dominaria, but
yeah. Also, I'm glad that they acknowledge the meme. Like, this is the
I mean, if you're going to make a Spider-Man set, you kind of right? Although, I do wish that the art was a little more zoomed out, maybe. I don't know, the perspective seems like a little bit closer than the meme or something. So, but it's still. Yeah.
That's why you play extended.
Yeah, you got to get the extended out anyway. Get the full meme, yeah. All right, so for my first pick, I got a card that I'm really excited about just because I think it's going to be really fun. And I think it's actually kind of good. And that is Villainous Wrath. So Villainous Wrath is a 5-mana wrath in black. And it says target opponent loses life equal the number of creatures that they control. And then you destroy all creatures. So essentially, it's one more mana than a damnation. It's a crux of fate. 5-mana black wrath. But you also get this Rakdos Charm mode filled in where you can just take one person out of the game. And we were just talking about the possibility of popping off with imposter syndrome where someone's making all these copies and all these tokens. Villainous Wrath doesn't just deal with the board. It deals with the player who made the big board. And I love how it like kind of naturally punishes whoever's popping off the most, because you're going to be incentivized to target whoever has the most creatures. That's presumably the person that's ahead and having like the biggest game, and it punishes that person, and it doesn't punish all the other person. For them, it's just like a wrath for everyone else.
Yeah.
So I think it's just like a super fun and cool design, and I think cards like Rakdos Charm just lead to great stories and moments in Commander. Like, that's one of the biggest upsides of putting those cards in their deck is like, there's Rakdos Charm stories that you tell like 10 years later about that one time where I got someone. I think Villainous Ralph is going to create a lot more of those moments, but just at a better baseline, because a 5 mana Black Wrath is way more playable than I would say a Rakdos Charm in a vacuum. So, but what do you guys think of Villainous Wrath?
I like Deadly Tempest. I always just wished it were a little bit cheaper, and this is more in line with it. So now you could actually run like this and Deadly Tempest to really punish somebody who goes wide. But yeah, this is a fun one that I definitely plan on playing in Commander as well for those exact reasons, right? There's going to be so many gotcha moments where, oh, maybe if you pop off too hard, you're going to get like Villainous Wrath. So you got to like worry about
it. Phil looks so scared.
Yeah, it's just going to obliterate me regularly from now on. It's so bad.
Where do you guys rank this?
Play sec outlets. You can't. Oh, yeah, you can't just sec everything in response. Like if you have a Yawgmoth or something. I guess if you have a Yawgmoth, you still take one damage for each creature, but
you draw a bunch of cards along the way. Where would you guys rank this in the hierarchy of Black Wrath and Commander? Like you got Toxic Deluge, Damnation, a Blasphemous Edict,
Decree of Pain,
the expensive ones, Decree of Pain, what Blood Money, the Treasure one. There's a few different like 7-8 mana ones that like have upside. Meat Hook, sort of. Is this one you're going to put in a lot of decks? Like, I guess that's the question. Like, does this make the cut in a lot of your black decks, or is this going to be only for specific like archetypes or memes?
I mean, for me, who loves gacha cards, I'm definitely going to put this in every black deck, right? And I think I would choose this over, well, okay. I find every year it gets a little bit harder to play a Black Wrath that is more than 5 mana, right? Yeah. Like, I have very much so, like, okay, Toxic Deluge is a lock. Damnation is starting to kind of, like, drift for me just because the 5 mana Wraths have more value to me, or, like, in some way, shape, or form. And so I do like Toxic Deluge into Blasphemous Edict into like maybe now Villainous Wrath. I think this is like Wrath number 3. And then I still love Meat Hook Massacre, but I don't view Meat Hook Massacre as a full wrath. Not usually it isn't. It's more of an enchantment piece. I care more about the life loss and gain part.
Right.
So
yeah.
I think this card is going to be pretty solid though. I like it just because of the gacha moments.
It is better than Damnation, right?
I think
like,
so.
I don't. Yeah, like you don't cast Damnation on turn 4.
But yeah, that is also true.
Especially this one, you don't cast on turn 4.
It's better later.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're black, and black is pretty good at making a bunch of mana in the mid to late game with coffers and the mana doublers and stuff. So maybe being one extra mana is not actually that big of a deal between this and Damnation.
Yeah, I mean, this does more. Like, I don't know, Wrath of God itself doesn't really see that much play outside of those who just love Wrath of God, right? Like the card and some sentimental value. But yeah, that card and
But white has all the reduced wraths.
Yes.
I guess that's also true that white has better and more wraths than black does somehow.
Right. I mean, white does have a lot, but now black is kind of getting there, right? Because I remember way back in Modern when I was just like, yo, we need more than just Damnation because that card is like $70. we're kind of seeing it.
Do people play Blasphemous Edict?
Yeah, yeah. I've seen Blasphemous Edict.
I remember putting it in some decks, but now I always forget about it. I played it in my 5-drop stack, but it showed up on Scryfall.
I found it to be pretty good. I like Blasphemous Edict quite a bit. You don't get the cost reduction nearly as much as you do on Blasphemous Edict because 13 is like a big number.
Act.
But it's 5 mana Wrath the board most of the time, which is still fine. So even if you don't get the reduction. So I think that's actually very good too. I'm probably going to play this in a lot of decks though, just because I like Crim. Enjoy the gacha moment. It's I think like the 1 out of 20 games where you just kill someone with this is going to be make it worth paying one more mana than like a Damnation a lot of the time. But speaking of Crim, I think you're up. What do you got for us, Crim?
The next card I want to talk about is probably Hide on the Ceiling. This is a one, or sorry, it's an X and blue instant. Exile target artifact or X target artifacts and or creatures. Return the exiled cards to the battlefield under their owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So I think generally all of us here are pretty high on March of Swirling Mists, right? Like, so March of Swirling Mists phases things out. And that's good. Don't get me wrong. I obviously think that's great. And then the main thing is that, like, obviously you could pay for March through alternative methods. You can't with Hide on the Ceiling, but not being the best in class doesn't mean that this card can't be played. I think just like how there's a number two sweeper in black, there should be a number two copy of, like, a March of Swirling Mists. And I think this is solidly that, because you'll also get to blink it. It comes back, you get your ETBs, you can blink artifacts. So that means, like, if you've got mana rocks, you can use the mana rocks, blink the mana rocks, they come back, and then you can use them again later, right? So, like, I personally like that you get the stuff back immediately, because, like, let's say March of Swirling Mists brings it back at your upkeep. You don't get anything, you don't get to use those things for, like, maybe the turn that you're trying to, like, save your stuff from, right? But let's say now I use Hide on the Ceiling, it comes back at the end of your turn, I can now do something and defend myself against the next player in turn order. So I really like this card just as a solid mass blink, even if it's only for, like, two or three. Mass blink or exile, get some ETBs again, reuse some mana rocks or artifacts again. Who knows? There's a lot of application, and mostly just because I want to say thanks, Spider-Man, for saving, like, you know what I mean, for saving my stuff.
I also think this card's actually really good, but it's kind of funny. The part that I'm most hyped about actually isn't the saving your team part. I think that's, like, the baseline mode, and I think it is, like, the not as good, but the second place to March of Swirling Mists, as Krim said, is a way to, like, save your team in a blue deck. But what I'm excited about is really two things. So one is it also hits artifacts, which is kind of cute. A lot of blink effects, especially in white. You can't blink artifacts. You only blink creatures. So that's a cool upside. The other thing is it can target your opponent's stuff, which opens up all kinds of shenanigans where you want to Alpha Strike your opponent. You can blink out their blockers. Or if you need to reset some effect that's on the battlefield that has a bunch of counters on it, blinking it gets rid of all the counters on it. So there's just a lot of interesting synergies and, like, tricks with this card. And to me, it looks pretty efficient. Like, I know it's not efficient if you're just trying to blink a single thing, but when you consider that, like, Ghostly Flicker is three mana to blink two things, and that's one of the best blink spells, this is three mana to blink two things. So I feel like this card actually is, like, relatively fairly costed, and it's just incredibly flexible. But Phil, what do you think about this one? You like the value? Is this a Phil card?
Yeah, I'm still torn. Like, it's gotta be good. But then Richard made a pretty good point in the, I think it was on the podcast, right? Where he's, or was it in the Discord? But
I think it was the podcast.
You kind of can save yourself from a wrath there. Like, you know, you're not going to keep up seven mana. And even then, it's just six things. I really like the, like, if you get a Catcher Voltron player without protection, and then you reset all the equipment or throw off all the auras or counters.
Yeah.
The name and artwork for the Omen Path version is pretty cool. It's spectral restitching, and it looks cool. Sorry, I love the Omen Path. I wish they made this, like, give me the whatever. But I want to like this card. I hope I try it and not forget about it. But it seems like, I think we might just be too tricksy about it, and it's just very good if you play blink. It's just ephemerate with extra.
I think that's the floor, right?
Efficient.
Like, worst case, it's got to be good in blink decks. Best case, maybe it's even better than that, and you play it as, like, kind of a utility spell for saving your board and, like, disrupting your opponent.
If you want to have this, you play the March and keep it at this, and then in blink deck, you play this as the second March. That seems reasonable.
Yeah, it's definitely
then blink
worse.
Decks also have other mass blink. But,
yeah, it's
like
definitely way worse at saving your team than March. But it is nice to get to reuse ETBs, which March doesn't end up doing. So it's gonna be interesting. Anyway, Phil, what do you got for us? Back to you.
Okay, so since I'm gonna buy one card from this set, and that is Urban Retreat. It's a land that enters tapped. It taps for green, white, or blue. And for 2 mana, return a tapped creature you control to its owner's hand. Put this card from your hand onto the battlefield. Sadly, only as a sorcery. This is just too good. I wish there was a version that doesn't have the Spider-Man suit on it, but I don't mind it too much in the land base. And it's the same with the web-slinger mechanic. I love the return tapped creatures to hand. I wish I could do it at instant speed. There's one card that does it, but this also counters something. But I love the idea of returning something while attacking or to protect something from a wrath. And also just re-trigger ETBs while ramping. This is just too good. It's going to go into my Brewing Chef deck. And I don't know. I don't even know what I copy with this. Maybe even if I return a Fairy Artisan with this, the token stays forever. That's all the value I need. It's also, what are the costs here? It's a tapped tri-land.
Yeah.
It's just a very interesting card. This one might make an exception. I will play this.
The land designs from the 2 rare land designs.
Oh, the other one
I really, really like. The Mayhem land and this land are a couple of my favorite cards from the set. And I think even outside of being able to reuse your stuff, it's also just kind of ramp, right? Like if you can pick up a creature, I'm imagining like, imagine like playing a Wood Elves or something and like ramping with it and then attacking with it and picking it back up and replaying. And you just end up, or Mana Dorks work really well with it, but then you got to pick up the Mana Dork and replay it. But still, like, I think that's fine. So I think the only thing I dislike about this card, and this isn't even a dislike, it's just like not going to go into as many decks as it could just because it's 3 colors. Like if you could play this in mono green or like Selesnya, I think it would show up in a ton of different decks. But I think still I would play this in, I think, any creature heavy Bant deck.
Yeah.
Like I think it's going to be worth playing.
It's kind of nice. I like it with like Mana Dorks, right? So like, yeah, like the Mana Dorks have already done their job. You know what I mean? And so being able to bounce them back, I kind of like that. There's obviously the ETBs that Phil and y'all were talking about. But, like, I think these lands, this and Oscorp, are super cool to me. So
I think both of them will always feel super clever. That's kind of like, I like cards that feel
lands
like,
that make
I did
feel
a
smart.
Cool thing. No, just like warp and then flicker something. And this is like, ooh, look, I tap this and then I got it back and then I replay it and I trigger something. It's like so tinkery. I really like this card design here. I kind of hoped for a whole cycle here, but
I would not be surprised if it is a full cycle, but we get the rest of them in future Marvel sets. So I think it might be a cycle that's like split up, like the Soulstone and Friends, but yeah, the lands are super sweet. Well, my next pick, we'll just do the Soulstone. We gotta talk about this. We did a whole podcast on it. I'll just bite the bullet. I'll do the Soulstone. The Soulstone, we did the whole Mana Rock podcast, so go back and listen to that. So we won't probably go super in-depth on this, but it's a 2-mana Infinity Stone Legendary Artifact Mana Rock. It's indestructible. It taps for black. You can pay 7 mana, tap it, exile a creature you control to harness it, and once you harness the Infinity, at the beginning of your upkeep, you get to reanimate a creature from a graveyard to the battlefield. As I mentioned before, we did a whole podcast about Mana Rocks and the Soulstone when this was first spoiled, and I think our conclusion was pretty much the card's kind of insane. Like, it's just, it's a 2-mana Mana Rock, and you get all this upside out of it. Like, it goes in pretty much any black deck. You can play it in multicolor decks as well. Obviously, if you're, like, a Reanimator deck, it gets even better, but that's not necessary. The only problem with the card is it is currently incredibly expensive. It's I think, $140 for the cheapest version, and...
Yeah.
I was just looking today, the like rarest version's 20K at the moment for like the gold looking one.
Who has that? No, who opened that? There's no way someone opened that, right? How is it 20K?
No, that's the prices that are being offered for it. Like people are I don't think people have seen it yet, but yeah, so it's already incredibly expensive. But anyway, Soulstone, anything to add to it?
Yeah, I think it's really cool that the base version is done by Vulcan Baga. So if you notice, it's in the layout and the form as every other Mox they've done. So Mox Opal, Chrome Mox, Mox Diamond, and that's why the stone is in that exact position.
I was going to say, there's been a couple of cool art callbacks in the set, too, because they had the unmasked one, too, where it's like Spider-Man taking off the mask, and it's RK Post that actually did like unmask art, and it's like the same image, basically. So I really like those tie-ins to the history of the game a little bit.
Yeah, I really appreciate that's like a beautiful blend of like, you know, like magic and Marvel, right? Like, and that is, it's just really cool to get deep cuts from like, you know, deep little nods like that and flavor from like, oh, this is like a Mox, so we're going to make it in the Mox art. I thought that was really nice.
Let me ask you a serious question, Phil. So the card's good. We all know the card is good. Is it $140 good? Let's say you want to build a black deck in Commander. Is it worth investing $140 of your deck budget into getting a copy of this, or do you just play a Mind Stone and keep $140 in your pocket?
I guess the question is, it's so good. I don't know. In the white one will be very, very good because you don't blow it up yourself. Like, mono black doesn't really blow up artifacts. Exile a creature you control, harness the source at the beginning. I mean, it's so good. I don't think any piece of cardboard is worth this much money, but it is just absurd how much they power crap this.
I don't really like it,
but it's on my list as well, obviously. It's just ridiculous.
It would have been on my list, but I saw that y'all already had it.
Yeah, everyone's
like, I don't need to put it on there.
Well, I don't know what else we can really say about the Soul Stone. It's super strong, but also super expensive, and it's probably going to remain at least somewhat expensive, I would imagine. But let's keep moving on. Krim, back to the top of the order. What do you got for us?
All right. So on the next card, I think I'm going to go with a villain that I've enjoyed. You know, I read him in the comics. He ran this, like soup kitchen and helped the community out, but at night he was secretly a villain. And that's Mr. Negative. So Mr. Negative is a 5 Orzhov, vigilant, lifelink, and dark force inversion. When Mr. Negative enters, you may exchange life totals with target opponent. If you lost life this way, draw that many cards. I mean, I have this built in paper. I know what I'm going to do. I think we all get the first thing we all thought about is Tree of Perdition, right? Like we're going to Tree of Perdition and we're going to try to, you know, like that's going to be an auto include into this deck. There's so many fun things you could do with this deck as well, right? You heal yourself and then just swap with somebody else and then just draw like 20 cards. This is an enters the battlefield ability, so that's really nice to reanimate, because usually these things are like, you know, you got to cast it, you got to do all these things, and then you know, this is just on enters. So I think this as a card, assuming you don't have a Screaming Nemesis emblem, is a really fun card.
God.
I feel like this is maybe the coolest commander in the set for me, like out of all the legends in the set, and there are a lot of legends and a bunch of really cool ones, but this one really just caught my eye for some reason. Like, the ability's unique, it seems really powerful, it draws tons of cards, which of course I'm gonna love, and plus it's kind of like an Orzhov blink deck, I think is how I would probably go about building it, with ephemerids and stuff, because once you start blinking its ability, it gets so out of hand so quickly, where you can essentially like draw a huge amount of cards and not lose any life if you play this and immediately blink it, which is just so incredibly strong. So I actually think it's a really fun commander, and I would consider playing in the 99 of like reanimator decks or life swap decks too, because I think it's just a really cool, powerful effect. But where are you at on this one, Phil?
I just noticed that you can, if you blink it, you reset, you get your life back. So
I like the idea that it's
weirdly not that scary, because people don't expect the, oh no, they're going to go to one and then switch. But especially if it's Seth, I just assume you have 70 life more and I just get all this life. The blink thing is kind of interesting. I also put the card in Photoshop. Maybe, sorry, Morgan, for the extra work. But if you invert this card, it's interesting how different he looks than inverted. Like, his face looks like a human face.
Oh,
it's,
really?
It's always interesting.
So it's actually
how
kind
different
of like a negative?
Like. It is a full negative. It's like it's... Yeah. Whole guy there.
The comic panels for this?
Is that how he looks in the comic,
so cool.
too?
Yeah.
Oh, I assume the comic looks super. How does it work in the comics? Like, does he turn negative overnight?
It's just like he just yells negative powers. Okay, no. He does just kind of turn into it.
Negative Nancy. Oh, I wish the Omen Path version would be called Negative Nancy.
How did he get this power? Did he, fell into an undeveloped roll of film or something? Like, how did he become Mr. Negative?
Press Control I in real life. Photoshop jokes.
I'm going to look up the lore on Mr. Negative because I don't know how you end up with that superpower, but the card itself is definitely one of the coolest ones in the whole set.
I mean... it's a long thing that I feel like I would have to explain a lot. All right.
I'll Google it. Yeah. It's probably too much for the podcast. I'll Google it sometime. Let's keep moving. Oh, you got more on Mr. Negative? Go ahead, Grim.
The funny thing is, like, Phil talked about that, and I think I mentioned it on the regular podcast, but somebody replied to me, if you kind of flip the border around on this card, you could, it would have been really cool if it, they showed me a version of it where it was white bordered, and
said this on the podcast.
It would have been kind of cool if Mr. Negative was the only white bordered card in the set.
It would have been so cool. Yep. I wonder how big of a hassle that would be during the printing process. I wonder if that's why they didn't do it. That might be the sticking point, but it would look so cool if that was like the only white border card. Yeah. All right, let's move on. Phil, what's good from the Spider-Man set for us? What do you got?
All right, another card that almost made it to my decks, but I want the effect on a 3-drop. It is Lizard Connor's Curse, or otherwise King of the Cold Blood Curse. Oh, this looks so cute, though. Whatever, we can't have this. So we get Connor's Curse. It is 4-mana, 5/5 trample. That's what I don't like, because we're playing Commander and I'm not too interested in an overstatted creature. It is pretty cool that it beats its own lizard, because when it enters, up to one other target creature loses all abilities and becomes a green lizard creature with base power and toughness 4/4. So this is like Canriff's transformation. Comments.
What?
Phrasing.
Yeah. What?
Phrasing. Bill, phrasing.
I'm not saying anything. I'm just acknowledging Connor's Curse is a cool card.
It's a great card.
I love lizard.
Yeah, it wins against the 4/4 lizard it creates.
It turns
something into a 4/4 without an ability, so insane commander hate on a creature, which I would really love for my Lonus deck. Like, I play I play Oko in my Lonus deck to beat Elish Norn, and this one wouldn't do anything against Elish Norn, but I like the effect on a creature. Like, as an ETB, you totally wreck an opponent's commander. It still deals 4 commander damage, so the 4/4 is way better than the 3/3. I don't know how much better, but 4/4s are like legitimate creatures. Then it's a 5/5 trample for 4. Why can't it be a 3-mana 1/1 with, I don't know, Forest Walk or something?
Yeah. I keep going back and forth on this card. On one hand, it seems like really good removal to me, right? Like, it's got a fine body, not that I care too much about it. It gets rid of commanders forever. On the other hand, we have the 3-mana, what's the Oko enchantment, the elk something and you draw a card. I can't think of the name at the moment.
Kenrith's Transformation.
That's 2-mana. Beast Within's 3-mana. You got Oko that's 3-mana. So my only question is 4-mana too much for the effect? I still think in the short term, I'm going to try jamming this in a lot of my green decks. Is just like, because green, unless you want to play fight spells, doesn't have that much creature removal, and it definitely doesn't have that many permanent ways to remove commanders like some other colors do. So I think I'm going to try jamming this in a lot of my green decks in the short term. Whether or not it actually sticks, we'll have to wait and see. Maybe it's just like too expensive for what you do. But where are you at on this one, Krim? Like, how good do you think this is in Commander?
I think it's really good for mono green, right? I mean, you get, again, redundancy isn't a bad thing in a singleton format. Right. So I would like to have more of it. And on top of that, it being a creature is the difference between the other cards that were mentioned, right?
Yeah, and being a creature is relevant in green. Green has stuff that triggers, like, card drawing wise based on creatures entering, like the Great Henge. And it's even, like, kind of big. Like, you wouldn't be super happy if you wish card expertise for 5, but it's also not the end of the world. Like, drawing five cards is still, like, fine, right? It's not as good
as 5 cards,
or something,
not a lot.
But it's still, like,
yeah.
But drawing 5 is still pretty reasonable. So maybe being a creature in the context of green, I want to draw 7 or 8 cards, Krim.
Okay.
But in the context of what green does in Commander, maybe it's even a little better than I was giving it credit for.
can play, I mean, play it as a commander, play mono song. Green stacks.
Ooh, yes. Oh, that actually sounds kind of
can
funny.
Can you make mono green blink?
Oh, maybe? Maybe.
So I've been playing, not really for content, but I kind of like playing regular mid-range decks from time to time. And I like in Timeless to play Orko and Bowmasters. And it's a sweet synergy where you create the Orc army, but then turn it into an Elk. So it's a 4-4, and it's not it's not an army again. But it's like, if you have an army that's just a 0-0 with counters, you get a lot of value from just turning this into a 4-4 just to buff it up.
It's kind of funny. I thought of that in the context of Standard. Like, oh, you can play this, and I can get rid of your thing's abilities, or I can make my Llana Werealf into a 4-4. That's kind of cool. I hadn't really thought about it much in the context of Commander, though, but I guess that's an upside where, like, those mana dorks that kind of lose their value eventually, being able to turn one into a 4-4 and be down, like, maybe that's enough of an upside.
Losing we don't swing into Richard's, like, Sky Scanner, okay? We don't even swing into a 1.
Yeah, true.
We're definitely not swinging into a 4-4, right? And especially if it's, like, you play Lizard to then pump your own mana dork and have Lizard, so you now have 9 power on board. So, I think...
Oh, yeah, I wonder if this really is just good in Standard. If you curve a Llanova into this...
That's then, a lot of power.
Yeah.
Huh. A lot of power and toughness. I wonder, too, if there's... This is probably... I can't think of an example of this, but it'd be cool if you could use it to get rid of a negative ability on one of your cards. Like, you play something that has, like, I don't know, powerful enters, but then a negative static ability and use this to get rid of it, but I don't know what you can actually do that in practice with green. But maybe there's a way that getting rid of the abilities could be an upside, too. Anyway, let's keep moving on. For my next pick, I got a card that I think it's going to be pretty good, and that is Morlin. Morlin, Devourer of Spiders, who I imagine is probably not one of the good guys if he's devouring the spiders. It's a double black and X, 2/1 legendary vampire villain. Oh, that's a villain, okay. Legendary vampire villain with lifelink. It enters with X +1/+1 counters on it, and when it enters, it deals X damage to target opponent. So Morlin, it's kind of like Maga, Trader of Mortals, way back in Kamigawa 20 years ago, except Maga was 3 mana and it didn't have lifelink and it started as a 0/0, I believe. This is just like Maga, but way, way better than Maga ever wanted to be. And I really like this in a couple of situations. So one is in mono black. And as I mentioned earlier, mono black, because of coffers, is really good at making a lot of mana. So I think in the late game, it's kind of realistic that with stuff like coffers, maybe Nykthos, maybe some of the Nurkana Revenant, Cryptgast style mana doublers, that this could maybe just take someone out of the game. We see a lot of black decks that finish the game in like a big Torment of Hailfire or something like that. And this can kind of only hits one person, but still you can kind of take one person out of the game. It also lines up really well with just what black likes to do, which is draining people. Maybe you can't quite lethal someone with Morlin, but when you add in Grey Merchant of Asphodel, draining people, and Exsanguinate draining people and so forth, this actually just fits really well into that context. Plus you can play it in vampire decks, so you get a little extra like tribal synergy out of it where it seems good in vampire too. So I actually think this might be not as good as Grey Merchant, but like Grey Merchant at home in mono black decks and Commander. And I think that might still be good enough for me to put in a lot of my mono black decks. But what do you guys think of Morlin?
I did not connect the dots with a lifelink there.
Yeah.
it's on me. That is interesting.
I love that. I love that part. That lifelink part, I think, is just going to casually slip by like it already has. And I think it's going to be a big body with a giant draining a card. I like it, right? Like Seth had mentioned, this is what Mono Black wants to do. And on top of that, it's just attached to a very, very cool looking little vampire guy, right? So I think this is just a simple design that is just very sweet.
I think the deck that I think it's best in out of the vampire decks is probably Veto, because in Veto, you can kind of kill 2 people with it, since you get one person with the damage and another from gaining the life from the damage, so you can take out 2 people instead of 1. But I think it's good in other decks as well. But the Veto synergy in specific, I think the card is really good there. And they're both vampires.
Thought about putting Veto in the command zone. That is so scary.
Yes.
He's also cheap. He is so cheap. He's like 3 mana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he can do some frightening things.
Oh, my God.
All right, let's give it another round. Krim, let's go back to the top of the order. One more time through Spider-Man. What do you got?
Okay. So there's a ton of theft stuff I like, but also I feel like since Tomer isn't here, and I think Tomer liked this card, maybe I'm misremembering that, but Rent is Due. Right? I also like this card. I think
Tomer
y'all are
like it.
Yeah, right. Okay, so Tomer did like it. I like the card, but yeah, it's one mana. It's one white, specifically. An enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, you may tap two untapped creatures and or treasures you control. If you do, draw a card. Otherwise, sacrifice this enchantment. This is just sweet, right? This is a very efficient, cheap engine. Like, I know that you can't just turn one play this, because obviously, you know, but I think that, it, like, to be able to just play this and at for such a low cost, because it also triggers at your end step, by the way, not your next upkeep or anything like that, you can immediately get that value. And it's only for one mana. So it's a good, just clean, simple card advantage engine.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
I'm a big Drekton. Oh, go ahead, Phil, sorry.
Oh, I don't know. I actually, it reads so good, but it, I don't know. It's not the first time we fall for a white enchantment and say, "Ooh, this is every turn."
I know. Whenever there's a white
just
enchantment,
had a
that makes, yeah, every turn and makes treasures, I'm skeptical now. Smothering Tithe is good, but every other time there's a treasure white enchantment, it just falls apart. I think this one is actually good, though. I think it's actually good. So I'm a big Phyrexian Arena believer. So if you were to tell me there's a one mana enchantment that draws me an extra card each turn, I already think that's going to be a good card. So yes, you do have to jump through a little bit of a hoop, which is have two creatures or treasures that you want to tap, but I don't actually think that's going to be that difficult. When you think about white decks in Commander, a lot of them play a lot of, like, catch-up ramp creatures and these dorky, like, cheap creatures to generate value, helpful healers and spirited companions. Think of a Richard deck. I feel like those creatures are going to be really easy to tap to draw a card on your end step. Plus, white is pretty good at making treasures with Smothering Tithe, some of those cards that we memed on last week, like Monologue Tax, Smuggler's Share, but still, like, there's a lot of ways to make treasures, and if you all you need is two treasures sitting out, and you can keep this going forever. So yes, there are going to be times when you can't play it. Yes, there's going to be times where you play it and your board gets harassed and you have to sacrifice it. What is one mana? If you draw two or three cards with this, you build yourself an Ancestral Recall split up over a few turns. Like, you don't got to be too greedy. It's not like this has to draw you 10 cards for one mana to be good. If it draws you three cards, it's already one of the best cards that's ever been made. So I actually am really high on this card. I don't
this
think it goes in
you
every
where
deck, but in the decks it's good, it's going to be really good.
This shows you where Seth lies in the color pie. Because the green card, oh, it only drew me five cards.
Yeah.
The white card, oh, it drew me three cards. This is
great.
Oh, right?
That is awesome. Yeah.
This is a little bit of a commentary on where green is, but you know what I mean?
that is true, though.
So, what really gives me hope is it is on the end step. So you can't get blown out. Like, play it, and then next you untap without creatures, and then that's it.
Right.
What also gives me hope about this is that I really like how the station lands play from EOE.
Oh,
I play them in a lot of decks, and I regularly find myself just every creature I play, I just tap as long as I have like one or two blockers just to disincentivize value beats in my face. I'll try it. I don't know if I put it in any of my paper decks yet, but I will try it on Clash. You gotta play creatures. Like, I don't know, white treasures. You usually get them with the opponents doing stuff or something, so I don't know if you can reliably get treasures. Maybe
I've been finding
it's
myself
a little
playing
worse
Fountain Port in every
Ooh.
Deck I play. And Fountain Port itself alone does. Obviously, this is a whole system you've kind of just set up.
Yeah, this is it.
But, like, I think because of the low investment on mana for Rent is Due, I think it's just it's so nice. And it's not that hard for you to get a bunch of little, like, poopers, right? Just, like, little 1/1s or something like that. So, no, I just feel like
this is... As long as you don't open yourself up for... People swinging in and say, oh, I just want to draw this card, you know.
I just got to put my dousing dagger, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think it's going to be worth testing at least. I will say it might be a little worse in the Clash meta because we have Smothering Tithe banned, but I think that's the best way Treasure Maker, right? So if there's someone who's playing Smothering Tithe, then I think it gets even better there.
Well, like if you have excess treasures, kind of sucks if you say, I pay potential 2 mana kind of every turn for this, although this, I don't just, it's so hard to evaluate this card. It feels good. But I'm going to eat it in like a month and we say, oh, this is trash.
It is. That is possible. Like, it's one of those cards that's going to be hard to evaluate without playing with. I feel like the first game or two I play with it, I'm either going to feel like, okay, this actually feels really good, or, oh my God, this feels way worse than I thought. And I'm not going to know until I try it. So anyway, let's go back around to you, Phil. What do you got for your final Spider-Man pick?
Okay. One card that it's interesting. I'm going to play it in our Spider-Man episode because I'm going to play Anti-Venom, and we got a card that's made for the deck. It is With Great Power. It's 4 mana. It's an aura. It's enchanted creature gets +2/+2 for each aura and equipment attached to it. And then all damage that would be dealt to you is dealt to enchanted creature instead. Crazy with Anti-Venom or indestructible stuff or other stuff that doesn't really get damaged. Like, the white
things like that.
Phyrexian Obliterator, something.
Vindicator?
But, oh my God. the cool part is that the equipped creature gets, enchanted creature gets +2/+2 for each aura and equipment. That is an insane buff in an aura or equipment deck. We know it from, like, how good's, what's armor? The armor in standard.
Ethereal armor? Ethereal armor.
That glitters, all these things. It's just +1/+1, and it's already crazy, and this is just gonna one-hit people like crazy. And that kind of means that they gotta one-hit this, because everything else will just get wiped end of turn, like when damage resets. So I think if you put this on a creature that you can protect, and then have, I guess, all that glitters and the other one count all, usually in Voltron all the things are on one thing, but I really like the you gotta deal 12 damage to me or you deal no damage to me, and then even then it's kind of like the what's the throne of the emperor or something from Warhammer. It's a mana rock that only taps for 3 mana if you sacrifice a creature, and then otherwise it only, it's like when you lose the game, instead you go to 1, and this is kind of the same thing. Like you can't finish me in one hit. It's like you gotta get through this first, and I like a little pillow forting. We'll see how it plays. It is certainly in my Anti-Venom deck. It's crazy with this.
I love this card because I love Pry effects. There's nothing I like more than just jamming a Pry on a stuffy doll. Like, it's just such a fun synergy. And this is like one of the, I think, the best Pariah now, because not only are you getting the Pry effect, which is one more mana, but you're also probably getting a pretty big buff. And I think that makes the card kind of flexible. Like, you can play it like in all that glitters in like a more aggro-y, creature-y, boggle style deck or whatever, where you're using this primarily to get through damage. And it's going to maybe save you. Like, if you put this on a relatively big Voltron creature, like Phil was saying, you're going to have to deal 10-12 damage to actually get through the With Great Power and eventually deal damage to me. So you can go that direction, or you can go full on the pillow fort it, put it on the stuffy doll or the Ketramos or whatever, some indestructible hexproof anti-venom style creature, and just make it really hard for anyone to kill you. So I think this card is actually super fun. I really like this one.
I also have a question about it, though, because with great power, you know, there must also come great responsibility. Peter uses that as a way to not kill all of his enemies.
Oh.
Whereas this, like, you know, it's a way to become a, you know, to help the weaker, right, people with your great strength and all the powers and abilities you have. So does this mean that... Are you going to actually, like, eliminate a player with this? Can you eliminate a player with this?
Hey, I mean, look at Gwen Stacy, Grim. Look at Gwen Stacy.
Okay, that's not Peter Parker doing that. That's the Green Goblin.
Oh. I mean, you could eliminate a player with it. I mean, it's going to be hard. It would specifically have to be, like, on the stuffy dial for that part to kill someone. Oh, I guess you eliminate someone if you just throw down a big, like, ginger
or
something.
Yeah, you just hit them.
Yeah, like, just smack them with it.
Hit somebody. Which is where then I'm like, okay, if you put this on your anti-venom, that means, Phil, you actively cannot kill whoever's in last place. You have to go for the person in like, first place.
The spirit
I'm just
of
saying,
Spider-Man.
That's an unwritten flavor rule. Okay, we're just going with that.
I don't know. I don't know anything about Spider-Man. Okay, anti-venom, fair, perfect. That's so such a cheesy name. I'm sorry. Everybody's gonna get it.
Hey, comics have had some banger names like Paste Pot Pete. Okay, so like.
All right, we have one more card, and we can't do a Spider-Man cast without wrapping things up with one of our many Spider-Man, and the one that I'm actually think is going to have the most overall impact on Commander, not as a cool Commander, like Cosmic Spider-Man or whatever, but just as a really good 99 card that's going to show up in a lot of decks, is Spectacular Spider-Man. So Spectacular Spider-Man, it's 2 mana for 3/2. It's a white card. It's a legendary human spider hero. It has Flash. You can pay one to give it flying until end of turn, or you can pay one and sacrifice it to give creatures you control hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. So I know we talk a lot about protection spells in Commander, and white has Teferi's Protection. It has Flare of Fortitude. It has good options, right? Clever Concealment. I actually think this Spectacular Spider-Man is very close to being in the same tier as those cards. Maybe not the T-Pro tier. That card's kind of in its own tier. But I actually think that Spectacular Spider-Man is actually a very, very good protection spell, even though it might read a little weaker. Because I know someone's going to say, well, Farewell. This doesn't save you from a Farewell, right? If you phased out, you'd be saved from Farewell. And that is true. But Hexproof and Indestructible is still a very strong way to protect your board. And in the context of white in Commander, being a 3/2 Flash body is huge. It wears equipment. It triggers your creatures entering draw me card type stuff. So I actually think this Spectacular Spider-Man, my gut is, it's like a white staple in creature decks. Like, if you're just playing a bunch of creatures and you need another way to protect your board, I think this does almost exactly what you want to do in a white creature deck in Commander. But I'm curious what you guys think. Am I overrating it? Is this like a staple level card that you can jam almost T-Pro style in any white creature deck?
It's already in my humans deck, so I'm just like, yeah, as soon as I saw that, lock that in, I'm going to go to my deck, we're just going to put that in there.
You get the human synergy, too. Yeah, I forgot about that.
And then on top of you're right. It's a body. It's a Flash 3/2 body that's only 2 mana and can sit there for the rest of the game, right? Until kind of like when I play humans, I already have Jarena, the 2 mana one from Aftermath that can, you know, you sack it and all your humans get indestructible, yada, 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 right? This is just more of that and also is just a Flash body, which is way better than just a trick that people can see. Now, maybe you sit there and it sits there and the whole time the whole table can see it, but that doesn't stop it in some ways because you still can get hexproof. You still can have all of that to protect your board. They need to exile. So you force the exile out of your opponent's hands.
If this card did not have Flash, it would be unplayable. Like, that's how big the Flash... The Flash is so huge on this. Because think about how Teferi's Protection works, where someone goes to cast a Wrath, there's always this everyone-holds-their-breath moment to see if the archenemy who's ahead has a T-Pro to phase out their board, because if they do, then they're just going to win the game, right? If your effect is just sitting on the battlefield, that's not going to happen. No one's going to, like, go for that line and try to Wrath if they know that you have this protection spell on the battlefield. So because this has Flash, you kind of can do the same thing, right? You get those blows. We see it with Heroic Protection in green decks, where someone goes to Wrath and then you Flash in casting Heroic Intervention at instant speed. Your board gets saved. Everyone else loses their creatures. You win the game. So Spectacular Spider-Man, it can do that exact same thing. But what do you think, Phil? You haven't really weighed in on this one. How good do you think this is at protecting your board?
I don't like that you have to pay mana, but I think then it's too good. Because the Flash is just a game changer. I already like Selfless Spirit.
No, the Flash is from DC, Phil. The Flash is from DC.
Oh.
I thought you weren't a superhero guy. Phil, what happened?
I like I already like just playing Selfless Spirit and say, I did everything I can. If the Wrath is an exile, okay. With this, it's even better because of the Flash. So, yeah, it's... it seems staple-y. It's crazy how pushed this is for 1v1. Like, 2 mana, 3-2 haste, flash, upside. That and very relevant upside from the second one. I guess the first one is also really very relevant.
I don't know if we should take this into consideration or not, but I think Wizards also, I assume they think it's good because this was the card they did all the different costume changes on, and there's all the variants, which are like some of the most expensive cards you can open. And usually I think Wizards tries to do that with cards that people they think are actually going to play. So I think it almost gets like a vote of confidence from Wizards too, just because of how many versions of it they printed in the set.
As someone who's lost to many a traveling chocobos. probably, right? I am very curious, though. Okay, so we know about the Flash. We love, not the DC character. We love the Flash effect and whatnot on Spectacular Spider-Man. How often do you think you will play this card as just a 2-drop that's going to sit on the board? Like, does it lose its value to you if it's a known combat trick? Because, like, I like that this can attack, this can beat down, this can do all of that. But then that loses the element of surprise. So
I think it really depends on the hand or situation, right? Like, it really depends. If I have a hand that needs to, like, get in a hit with an equipment or draw a card by triggering something, I think it's perfectly fine to run this out. But I also think part of the power of the card is it's also very good off the top in the late game when another 2-drop might not be, because then you can hold on to it and play it like a heroic intervention. You'll have enough mana that you can just flash it in, pay the one, sacrifice it. So I think it really just depends on, like, the deck I'm playing, and even more than that, what my hand looks like. Am I trying to flip equipment? Am I setting up for, like, a long game to protect my board? And I think that's part of the power of the card is I think it's fine both ways, really. Like, I think it's good enough both ways.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like Selfless Spirit, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Selfless Spirit is also good, and that one does have to sit on the board, right? That doesn't have Flash, I don't think. Yeah.
No, it does not.
Anyway, those are our top Spider-Man cards for Commander. You've heard our list. Let us know what you think. What cards from the set are you most hyped about for Commander? What do you think is going to be good? Let us know in the comments. And we'll be back next week to talk even more Commander. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.